I think it'll be amazing if we get this hour in without something happening to the stuff. But this is very, listen, this is very Kennedy assassination-like stuff. But it's, you know, you got to understand, every good plan is a conspiracy. And the thing of it is in 2007, and it really started in 2000, but when Bill Belichick became the head coach of the New England Patriots, when he left Cleveland, went to the New York Jets for what, 1 day, 2 days? Messed over a guy by the name of Bill Parcells, who you don't want to mess with usually. Ends up in New England. And so did Parcells, by the way. You know, the rest is history. They were terrible their first year. And then they win a Super Bowl in his second season, and the rest is history. And everything seemed to be hunky-dory, and we were looking at a phenomenal team. Then all of a sudden in 2007, a former coach of his, which you'll discuss at great length, a guy by the name of Eric Mangini, who just got a defensive coordinator job in the NFL, by the way. And he's back, you know. And I think Mangini's not a bad coach, but he was part of the New England Brotherhood. And let's just do this. Do me a favor. Tell me why you decided to do this, and let's just go into the introduction and how we got started with chapter one. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the way I got started on the book is that, you know, as a fan, every Sunday I hear everybody talk about Tom Brady being the best ever and Belichick being a genius. And I thought, you know, the Spygate incident really was swept under the rug. And I wonder if there was more to the story than fans were led to believe. So as I started to do investigation, I found so much information in the public space that literally shocked me, that by the time I realized that Ernie Adams existed, and we'll talk more about Ernie later, once I read about him, I knew I had the juicy information for a book. Now, writing a book about hearsay or rumor, innuendo about a team being a cheating organization is one thing. Proving it is another. It's very difficult, obviously. So at that point, I hired a PhD of statistical science from SMU, which is a big private school here in Dallas, and I studied the Patriots' performance versus the rest of the league. And what I found was that in several ways, in several statistical formats, they are three standard deviations away from the league, which would indicate something non-football related assisting them. So to me, that was the smoking gun that everybody was looking for, and with that, I started to write the book.
You know, what you're talking about is actually the last chapter in the book. That for a lot of people, that is not only is it the smoking gun, that's the stuff mathematicians and physicists. Well, physics isn't quite the math part of that, but the mathematical part of that, you would have PhDs with IQs over 140 going, something's going on here. And that's what allowed you to do it. And it was about the home games, right? Real quickly, let's get into that real quick, because that way we won't have to touch it as much at the end of the show. The Patriots had five seasons where they were undefeated at home.
There's two main statistical categories that jump off the page that make you say, wait a minute, something's not right here. The first one is that while they're using the Spygate system, they win and cover Vegas spreads at a rate of around 62%. Now, when I found that information, I thought, well, I had my mathematician chart this, and they're really far away from everybody else. See, what you see in these studies is that there's a cluster of NFL teams, and then there's high performers, and then there's a giant gap, and then there's the Patriots.
Right.
Meaning the Patriots have, let's say, you know, right off the top of my head, 38 winning covered bets. The very next team is a dozen wins back.
Correct.
See, that's not the way statistical analysis or bell-shaped curves usually are. There's some tail, but it's not, you know, another iteration away. So once I got that, I showed that to one of the foremost authorities on gambling in Las Vegas,
Wayne Allen Root. Yeah. Good guy.
And he's been in Vegas 40 years. Yeah, Wayne's a good guy. And when he first looked at it, he was a little bit suspicious, but I sent him everything. We did a couple of interviews, which appear in the book, and he says this should be impossible because when a Vegas line is set, they try to attempt to approximate the gap in the score to get people betting. Now, people continue to bet. And this has been brought up to me many times since the book came out. The line does move based on sentiment, meaning if people feel the Patriots are good enough, they'll bet the lineup higher, even maybe to an unreasonable level. But the Patriots were still clearing that hurdle.
Right.
So what it means is they couldn't possibly bake enough into the number
right.
to account for this cheating system. So people say, well, the cheating never mattered, or maybe it amounted to 1 or 2 points a game. Well, whatever it amounted to enough that Vegas couldn't account for it.
I hear,
and when people see that, their minds are blown.
Yeah,
and they say, this is it.
Now, it would be different if they had the number one offensive coordinator in the league and the number one defensive coordinator in the league, which in a lot of ways you can say Bill Belichick probably is a very good defensive coach. But he's been the head coach of this team since 2000. That's 15 years. Let's talk about the Spygate incident. Eric Mangini leaves New England and gets an $8 million a year, you know, not $8 million a year. He signed for $8 million, I think, for 3 years.
It was 2 a year.
With the New York Jets. You know, Mangini named his kid, his second son, I think, after Bill Belichick. His name is William. I mean, they were very good friends. He was his mentor. Whatever Bill was selling, Eric was buying it. But Eric gets a head coaching job. Now, I don't know what happened, but evidently Eric knew they were going to be trying to do some of the stuff they do in their Spygate scenario. And he had his security people watch one of the guys he knew was going to be filming the coaches on the field, on the sideline, which is against the rules. You can film from you know, wherever, but there's three places you can't film from. One is the sidelines. Because they
This is important to clarify, because this gets, you know, a lot of this stuff gets pushed back in my face, and this is one of them.
Okay.
People in New England say it's not illegal to tape signals. Okay, here's the problem. In the NFL regulations, it's specific about where you can tape. Okay, there's no mention of signals because they didn't think far enough ahead that we needed to create a rule that said no cheating. Okay, so what it says is you can only tape from certain spots, like the end zones. Okay,
right.
That way you can take shots of your team for study, et cetera, et cetera. You can imagine the end zone angles are the angles where you see the plays unfold, right?
Right.
There's almost no reason for a coach to shoot from the sidelines because you can't see much. Yeah, everybody's seen a game knows what I'm talking about.
Right.
Well, so after they got rumors and the Patriots were actually caught by people like Green Bay in 2006, Green Bay called the league and said, hey, we caught these guys taping our signals. We threw them physically out of the game, and we lost our game 35-0, by the way. And the league sent out a memo. No taping of signals ever, okay? Anybody who taped signals from that point on was knowingly breaking a law, period.
Right.
That's it. There was no ambiguity about it.
Absolutely. And the Green Bay thing was big because they actually pulled that guy off the field when that happened. We're going to take a break in about a minute. So let's finish up a little bit with Mangini. After they went ahead and pulled this guy up, they took his tape of the game, and they turned it over to NFL officials, correct?
Right. That's correct.
NFL security. NFL security, you know, at that time, there were several people. Didn't you tell me, wasn't Chris Mortensen one of the first guys on this? I mean, he was doing a hell of a job with this, wasn't he?
He was. He and Andrea Kramer reported in the very next day several things that are really important in the book. One is that it wasn't just the taping of signals. There was also an issue with their communication setup. And Andrea Kramer and he both said that this was the tip of the iceberg and that the league, all across the league, there were complaints of jamming opponents' headsets during critical moments of the game at Gillette Stadium and at Foxborough, important, at both stadiums, that they were bugging locker rooms, that they were doing a lot of other things, and that everybody was sick of it, kind of like now. Right? You see everybody at this fever pitch over Deflategate. Is this really over Deflated Ball?
Absolutely not. Absolutely
not. It's over
not.
This culture of cheating that people have been forced to put up with, and people said, enough is enough. So that's what really got this going, and that's what had reporters like those two hot on the case. But as I notice, that I show in the book, conspicuously, all these storylines are dropped almost immediately.
Yeah, they are. And you know, this could really, really, I mean, you know, everybody knows how much this could affect the credibility of the game. Listen, I'm going to sell something here for the National Association of Realtors, and we'll be back in a couple minutes. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. We'll be back with Brian O'Leary, Spygate, The Untold Story, in a minute.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back with Brian O'Leary, author of Spygate, The Untold Story. Brian, tell everybody how they can buy this wonderful book, would you please?
Oh, yeah, I appreciate that. It's available on Amazon in hardcover and in the Kindle version, and it's also available for iPads on the iTunes bookstore.
Spygate, The Untold Story. I read it a little over 2 years ago when I actually ordered it the Monday after my show. I got it, I think, Thursday, and I read it by Friday. And then I ordered another one, and I kind of use that to give away to people. Because you know what? Everybody thinks they know a lot about this. They don't know anything
right
about it unless they read your book, to be honest with you. Because everything listen, Brian, everything in here is well documented, you know, and that's the most important thing. And all we're looking for is the truth. I mean, you know, there's nothing worse than cheating. I mean, there really isn't. You know, and a lot of people will say, well, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. That's crap. I've coached since I was 20 years old, and that's not what I teach, that's for sure. So anyway,
I cover a couple of angles that you alluded to, and one of them is this culture of cheating in New England, which we're seeing more of this week. You know, I predicted that the Patriots were still cheating in the book, and I caught a lot of flack for that. And obviously this week I feel somewhat vindicated, because you know, if you think that deflating the balls, a couple of pounds of pressure, is all they're doing in New England, then you're out of your mind. I mean, why would anybody who's been caught numerous times cheating go to all this trouble for something so obscure and small?
Yeah,
right?
Know, just run. They're running out of time. They're running out of excuses. Here's the other thing too, and this is what I compare it to. And we all know people like this, but organizations this big and this powerful, when you only have 32 teams, you gotta figure the other 31 teams are about tired of it too. But here's the big thing. I'm going to compare this to O.J. Simpson. I might have said this to you. O.J. Simpson. Most people feel beheaded his wife and killed an innocent kid trying to help her. Okay.
Yeah.
He got off on that scot-free.
Mm.
He got put in jail, what, 5-6 years ago, because he went to Reno, Nevada and took a bunch of strong arm guys with him, and they got him on gun charges and assault charges and theft charges, and he may never get out of jail because of a very small thing. Deflategate, trust me. I'm sure quarterbacks, there's a lot of stuff that goes on, but that is literally nothing. And by the way, something happened, but if you've seen Brady's press conference, I've never seen Tom Brady that nervous in my life ever.
Well, hey, did you see on Fox News they had several CIA interrogators who are experts in body language? They said that both Brady, specifically Brady, was had signed deception. He wasn't telling the truth, and the same with Belichick. And a lot of people that know them well said they never saw them so nervous.
You know, the only thing I can think of, and then we're going to get right back to your book. The only thing I can think of is Robert Kraft. For Belichick to do that presser yesterday with virtually no, you know, there was no advance notice at all. I just happened to read a tweet about it, and I went to the NFL Network website, and there was the podium with the microphones. He was supposed to be on, but you could tell they were just waiting for him. And that was that was a joke. That was an absolute joke, in my opinion.
We're not polishing China here.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and
Here's the thing. Here's the thing, Bruce. Think about this. I stated this when the book came out, that Roger Goodell felt cheated and lied to in many ways, right? So this is really his second bite at the apple, isn't it? You know, he feels like he was embarrassed, and of course they did double his salary from $10 million to $20 million. So his friend Robert Kraft did pay him for all of his embarrassment and misstatements that he made that are clearly shown in the book to be falsehoods. But this is his chance for payback. You know, he could easily throw the book at either one of them. Kraft couldn't complain to him. And, you know, for the betterment of the league, I think that Belichick should be suspended for the entire season next year. Don't you think that Sean Payton feels that way?
Let me tell you, Sean Payton lost $9 million over Bounty Gate. And that was, you know, Bounty Gate was wrong, too. But they didn't have
it. How did it affect the outcome of a game?
Yeah.
Rigging a game to hit somebody hard is part of football.
That's worse. There's no doubt about it. Listen, it's all, in my opinion, Goodell is the problem. He's just as much of the problem as anybody else because he works. There's three or four owners, and you know who they are, Kraft being one of them, that run this league. Goodell's a puppet. And by the way, the $20 million, the raise.
Bruce. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
The raise they gave him, you know what he made this past year? $44 million.
No.
$44 million. Yeah, hello.
Oh,
I would give 43 of it to charity because the guy doesn't deserve that kind of money. I'm Bruce Hall. I'm talking to Brian O'Leary, author of Spygate, The Untold Story. Once again, Brian, tell them how they can get it.
You can buy the book on Amazon in hardcover form or for Kindle. And you can also buy the book for iPad on the iTunes bookstore.
And we're going to, and on BruceHallSports.com, we'll have a link to that also. You'll be able to, you know, come to us and get all the information you need. All right. So we get by that. Spygate's a big deal. You know, several really good reporters are all over it. How does it go away, Brian? How does that just disappear?
Well, the first thing the league did to put a lid on this quickly was to have the investigation open and shut in 4 days. Now, think about how long they've been deliberating about a little air pressure issue. This situation could have netted the three Super Bowls for the team, but they wanted the kibosh put on this right away. There was an ex-videographer named Matt Walsh who made himself known to the public, specifically the media. Hey, look, I exist. I used to work there. I know where all the bodies are buried. If the league wanted to do an investigation, they would have called him first, right? If you're gonna interview current Patriot employees, you'd be expecting them to want to cover for their boss. But an ex-employee wouldn't have that same problem. Well, they never contacted Walsh. The investigation was finished in 4 days. Now, here's where it gets crazy. After the investigation is, quote-unquote, finished because they gave the final punishment. When I say finished, I mean the punishment they gave after 4 days never changed. Okay. Soon afterwards, several NFL operatives went up to New England, gathered up all the additional tapes and notes that they had compiled using the Spygate system, and destroyed them on site in Foxborough.
Didn't even go to the NFL office.
Yeah. They didn't even trust that this information could be carried under lock and key in briefcases back to Goodell so he could study it and report back to the owners.
Now,
there
Brian,
was no such report.
Brian, didn't they give the punishment out before they even looked at any of the tapes?
Yeah, that's what I just said. The punishment came out 4 days. Several days after that, they go up to New England, gather everything up, and destroy it on site. And it was destroyed on Roger Goodell's personal order. You can see the quotes. They called Goodell, told him what they had. He said, get rid of it. Get rid of it. Does that sound like an investigation?
Not at all. And that was Jeff Pasch, who I think is still with the league, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I think I heard his name come up this week.
You know,
kid Matt Walsh isn't a bad kid. He was the one that talked to Andrea Kramer, right? And they spoke in detail, and she asked him something about this, and he said something that I've said on my show a million times. You know, $750,000 and a 32nd round draft pick isn't really a lot for three Lombardi trophies. You know,
yeah,
and that's exactly what it cost.
That's the clincher.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the clincher. Everybody says, well, it didn't matter. Well, you know, somebody who worked there says it netted them three Super Bowls. So whose opinion do you believe?
You know, the thing I love the most about your book is I love the documentation that you did. And all you got to do is go to the reference pages and see the people that you quote out. And I've pulled off stuff from your notes, and it's the entire thing. Let's talk about Tom Brady and how he got
Hey, Bruce, I wanted to mention one thing to you. I'm glad that you brought up the source material. When you buy the electronic copy of the book, if you get to a quote that you simply just can't believe and you see the little footnote, as soon as you touch the footnote on the electronic copy, it hyperlinks to the internet so you can see the actual story in the New York Times. or the Boston Globe.
That sounds
so you don't have to do any research.
That sounds like something I need desperately. Mike Florio was in a lot of these too. I mean, there were a lot of people all over this, and then all of a sudden they weren't. And that's really the saddest thing about it. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Tom Brady. Tom Brady's okay. drafted in the sixth round. He's not anybody. I think he ran a 5.240. I mean, he's not a kind of kid that can run. He was a good quarterback at Michigan. He's from California. Yeah, he's a nice kid. He's married to a woman worth $700 million. I think that's about what she's worth now. I don't feel sorry for the guy at all.
A little high.
But listen, exactly. But there's three. Listen, there's three constants, and you say this in the book several times. There's Ernie Adams, there's Bill Belichick, and there's Tom Brady. When you think about it, if you go back to 2000, I doubt there's anybody except Skarnecchia, who I think he's retiring as offensive.
His
son's the one that got busted for tape, right?
Twice.
He went with Josh McDaniels to Denver, They got that Spygate 2.
They got cut. That's something that your listeners will probably be surprised to hear. If you don't think that this issue was covered up, think about this. When Josh McDaniels went to Denver and cheated again, that was in the news for such a short period of time that most people don't even know it happened.
You know what most people don't know either? And I was one of them before I read your book, because I don't go to all the sites all the time. They didn't have an offensive coordinator for like 2 or 3 years, and they still went to the playoff. 1 year they were 14-2 without an offensive coordinator. How can you do that? You know.
Well, the question isn't how. The question is why. When the salary cap doesn't apply to coaches,
right?
I mean, he could have had Nick Saban. He could have had anybody be any coordinator. You could pay him $5 million each. Jerry Jones just did it down here in Texas. You want to keep your coaches? You pay them whatever you want. To go an entire season without a guy. I'll tell you what, I'm lucky enough to live in a house that was built by a professional football coach. Okay,
right.
He was a coach here in Texas. And all my neighbors tell me he was never here. Like, these guys work 80-hour weeks.
Yeah, they spend, the night at the complex, yeah.
Yeah, so if you can replace a 100-hour-a-week guy like Josh McDaniels with an empty chair, what does that tell you? Either Josh isn't doing anything that really matters, Ernie Adams is really calling the plays and Josh isn't, or they don't trust that they can hire someone they can trust. See, that's one of the points in my book that people just can't get around. They say, okay, if you read the book and Brian's crazy, then what about all these weird coaching hires? They hire people that are unqualified, no NFL experience, who instantly become the best in the league. And then they leave to seek millions head coaching and fall on their face.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen once. It happens 7 or 8 times.
You know, when
there's no way to explain 0 to 100 miles an hour back to zero other than a cheating system that's helping.
Right. When we get back, we're going to pick it up right here. And we're going to talk about some of those coaches who, when they left New England, you know, how poorly they did and how poorly they continue to do. We're talking to Brian O'Leary, the author of Spygate, The Untold Story. Brian, we'll be back in a minute, okay? Just hold on for everybody. We'll be back with Bruce Hall's Second Opinion in a couple of minutes.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com or by going to Facebook.com/BruceHallSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back and we're talking to Brian O'Leary, the author of Spygate, The Untold Story, which came out almost 3 years ago. And I've a lot of people that listen to my show on a regular basis, and trust me, I get some pretty negative and nasty tweets from time to time. And what we usually do with the real negative, nasty ones is we retweet them and send them out so these people look real smart to the entire public. But listen, let's talk about Ernie Adams and Bill Belichick, the friendship that they drew up when they were teenagers, really. And that is an incredible relationship, but it's a little black op type, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, the fact that Ernie Adams exists and no one ever talks about him is amazing. I mean, you know, a lot of the credit for their success is given to these young coaches like Josh McDaniels, who had no coaching background, and he's instantly thought of as the best coordinator in the NFL. it's much more likely that Ernie Adams is the one who deserves all these accolades. Ernie Adams went to prep school with Bill Belichick, where they became friends immediately. He's kind of a football junkie nerd who has this computer-like mind, who can spit off counterplay after counterplay. When you give him a set, he can tell you what would be the best opposing offenses or defenses, which is really kind of what the central, you know, intel inside Spygate is. You have to have somebody who can take the signals. Okay, this is the defense they're in. What play would work best against it? Well, you can do that either with software or with somebody who has a brain like Ernie Adams. And as I show in many articles written by, you know, very well-known authors other than me, obviously, somebody with ESPN, SI, these guys have all written about Ernie Adams, but people don't talk about him. And he's always coached with Belichick, so they're a tandem, buy one, get one free kind of thing. And as long as he's in New England and as long as he's hiding in the shadows, I would say it's highly likely that he was behind the deflated balls. I would say it's highly likely that they're doing other things. And the reason why, as you alluded to earlier, is their performance in home games is just impossibly good. They go perfect at home, 8-0 at home, more than they don't.
And they could have gone perfect at home this year, but they didn't. They didn't need the game, and it was to their advantage, Brian, to win.
Exactly. Well, let me put it in context. Over half of NFL teams have never gone 8-0 at home in the last 20 years since free agency started. Troy Aikman never did it. It's rare. Peyton Manning did it one time. Okay, when this happened, and I studied this, the outliers from the NFL. Two teams had done it three times. Two teams went 8-0 three times. The Patriots, at that time, the time the book came out, had done it five times. Since then, they've done it a sixth time, and this year would have been seven.
Easily.
Seven.
They didn't try to win this year, you know, because they already had it locked up.
Occurring are nearly 3 million to 1. This league is based on parity. All you have to do is have one fumble go the wrong way, and you lose a home game. It's just, you're either perfect or you're not. But they're always perfect.
You know,
almost always.
You made the statement. We're talking to Brian O'Leary, author of Spygate, The Untold Story. Phenomenal author. Phenomenal research that you did on this deal. When the book came out, you said it was 7,000 to 1, which was five times they had done it. And the odds were 7,000 to 1. Now think about that for a minute. That's lottery stuff. And it's also, you made the statement that you have a better chance of being hit by lightning once in your life than you do of winning five games and going undefeated five times in 11 years. And that, when you think about it's just unbelievable.
Well, that's nothing compared to what they've done since. See, that's the thing. Is that I make several predictions in the book, and that's one of them, that they would continue to be nearly unbeatable at home. It's hard to make a prediction like that in the future because NFL rosters turn over so much. For them to have gone perfect again, remember, most teams have never done it. In the short period of time since the book came out, they did it almost twice. They did it once and almost did it again. That makes it 2.5 to almost 3 million to 1.
Yeah.
3,000 to 1 is hard to believe in a league based on parity. 3 million to 1 isn't suspicious. It's kind of like this, Bruce. I use a sprinter analogy. If you go to the combine and you see a wide receiver from, you know, a little known school, let's say a 6th round draft choice, okay?
Right.
And he runs a 3.8 second 40.
Without a sprint coach. Right.
That's 3 standard deviations away from a good an average performance. So would you say to the individual, wow, that you're really fast, or test this guy? Humans don't run that fast.
No,
that's what's happening.
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, if you're somebody that has read your book years, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, and you understand about the Patriots, listen, almost every interview I have with an NFL person on this show, and there's been many, when we get to be talking about the New England Patriots and the line on a game and what do we think's happening, the first thing we say is, well, they're at home, they're going to win. So you know that, you know, because they cheat. And that's the first thing that comes out of my mouth. And nobody ever questions it. Nobody ever argues with me.
Right.
Because that basically is the deal. It was not a, it wasn't surprising to you and I to see Belichick and Brady's. When we heard that they had deflated the balls, what was the first thing you thought of? Why? Why do they feel like they still have to cheat to win?
Right.
You know?
That's one of the things that I got a lot of grief about was the fact that everybody said, it didn't amount to much. Even the other owner said so, and they stopped. And they're still good, so it never mattered. What I said is that the statistical evidence puts them so far away from the league that either they're aliens, non-football reason is causing them to be this excellent. And I speculated that they were still cheating. A lot of people said, you're going to be sued, and you're out of your mind. And now the chickens are coming home to roost. This isn't all they're doing, folks, I can promise you.
Well, it's also based on a lot of documentation, and it's also based on common sense. Listen, let's do this. Let's talk. We got 2 minutes left till the next break. Let's talk about the extra transmitter, the frequency that they use in the quarterback's helmet that is one more than they're supposed to have. Go ahead and explain that.
This is another subject that gets people a little upset. And let me go back from the beginning.
Sure.
When I first started researching the book, I found a story, let's call it a rumor, that Doug Flutie stated when he was a backup quarterback in New England and he was watching a game, he picked up a helmet he thought was his own. Sometimes people see backup quarterbacks holding a helmet up to their ear, and it's kind of like sideways. Well, the reason they're doing that is because there's a quarterback communication system in there, and there's a green dot sticker on the back of those helmets. Well, the rumor has it that Flutie said, I picked up Tom's helmet by mistake, and that they were talking right through the 15-second stop. Most people don't know, but you can't talk to your quarterback within 15 seconds of snap.
Right.
You've got to communicate with them all the way up to 15, and then the radio goes silent. Well, the rumor was that they added a second frequency so that when the league's frequency went off, they could keep talking to Brady. So I thought, okay, this is interesting, but it sounds kind of like a rumor. Then I found Chris Mortensen's report that said the day they were caught videotaping, there was also an issue with their communication setup. So I came up with this theory, okay?
Yeah.
But I still wasn't going to run with it. Okay, this is the most important thing, and I'm giving you a scoop here, Bruce, because I've never said this story before, okay?
All right.
What I did was I wrote it together the way I thought it occurred, and I called ESPN, and I told them, look, I'm going to quote Chris Mortensen as having said this. If he's got a problem with it, he better tell me now before the book goes public. An ESPN spokesperson, and I still have all the emails, said, Chris is very busy with the Peyton Manning story because Peyton was hurt at the time and the neck and all that. But he wants to know in writing all the questions you want to ask him. And by the way, nobody wants to talk about Spygate. I asked to talk to several other people. They said no one will touch this. The ESPN spokesperson admitted to me this was a topic that people weren't supposed to talk about. Okay? Important, right?
That's not too hard to figure out because nobody does talk about it.
Exactly. So a day or two goes by. Chris comes back. Chris politely declines your request. I said, do you understand? I'm going to quote him in this way. If he's not telling me not to, this is the way the book's going to be printed. Chris politely, he wouldn't go on the record. This is a reporter.
Yeah.
This isn't somebody that works in the White House, right?
Right.
He could have easily said, look, this is what we saw. There was nothing to it. But he didn't correct it. He didn't change it. And to me, his silence spoke volumes.
In your book,
so I went forward with it.
In your book, before we break here real quick, Dan Le Batard on his show, on his station, The Ticket in Miami, was one of the guys you quoted about it too. Because evidently, Flutie had told him or something.
Right. Well, see, like I said, the story comes from the internet. I called Dan Le Batard's show to get confirmation. And it's worth mentioning that the New York Post did the same thing. The New York Post also, before they printed a full-page article on me, which they've done twice, called Dan Le Batard's show. Their producer and Dan himself will not talk about this issue.
I hear you. Hold on for the next segment, will you, please? We're talking to Brian O'Leary, author of Spygate, The Untold Story. I've got to sell something here for the NAR. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. We'll be back in a minute with more of Brian O'Leary and Spygate.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com or by going to Facebook.com/BruceHallSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back with Brian O'Leary, the author of Spygate, The Untold Story. Pretty good timing with this interview. Having a great time with you, Brian. Love to have you on. Tell everybody how they can buy the book. And you know what? I'm going to get the one that that I can get on the internet, I think. That sounds a lot easier for a guy like me. Go ahead and tell everybody.
You can get the book in electronic copy for an iPad on the iTunes bookstore. And you can get the book in hard copy on Amazon.com. And you can also get it for Kindle on Amazon. So there's three different ways. Two devices and the hardcover. I'm probably about to sell out of the hardcover, so I'll probably bring it out in paperback in the next edition. But, you know, with the Deflategate, I've been interviewed on the radio almost every day for the last week, and I've been asked to come out to Phoenix, which I haven't decided whether I'm going to do or not. But the book is selling really well, and it's nice that a lot of the things that I predicted in the book are coming to be true.
But
you
listen,
know, a lot of people doubted it.
Absolutely.
But here it is.
It's a great book. Listen, I went to 20 Super Bowls in a row because I was in the sports entertainment business. And I used to take 4 to 8 NFL players with me. Believe me, if I had 50 rooms anywhere in Scottsdale, you'd be in one of them. That's for sure. Listen, let's do this. Let's talk about the coaches that came through the New England system. Charlie Weiss, mm-hmm. Romeo Crennel, yeah. All these guys.
Right.
And let's talk about what happened to them when they left.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you look at the book, I mean, the first thing I think that's most incredible is the background of the coach as they're hired. It's one thing to say, well, Josh McDaniels does appear to have some skill. Well, when he was given that clipboard, he didn't. You know, when Charlie Weiss left, he was the offensive genius behind the three Super Bowls. He went to Notre Dame to coach the, you know, according to the way I see it, the Patriots were in a very difficult situation. They were using a Spygate system. They needed somebody to go along with the system. So they hand those duties over to Josh McDaniels. Now, keep in mind, at the time, Josh McDaniels was only 1 year older than Tom Brady. Tom Brady was young at that time. And his position at that moment was assistant defensive backs coach.
I know.
Okay, here's a guy with no experience in NFL offenses at all. He's the clipboard and plays, and they're one of the best offenses in football. So how does he, by virtue of just handed a clipboard, become one of the best in the league? Then he goes on to break records, leaves and takes a head coaching job, and starts to fail, at which point he brings a videographer from New England and gets caught cheating again. And then I go through all these other coaches, their background, you know, Kent State, not even winning records. You know, it's hard to even imagine, how did these guys even get interviewed?
Yeah, you're talking about Dean Pease, who's the defensive coordinator. Yeah, he's
O'Brien.
A defensive coordinator for the Ravens, and is actually, from what I understand, a decent coordinator. But, I mean, he's nothing special, and they lose so many defensive people in Baltimore that they have to take whatever they can get sometimes. Bill O'Brien?
This randomness would dictate one of them would do well, and Dean Pease has. But there's also six other guys who were great and then just fell off the face of the earth, including Weiss.
Yeah, well, listen, Charlie Weiss is horrible. He went to Notre Dame, and they were stacked at Notre Dame when he got there, and he ended up having almost a .500 record there. And Charlie Weiss is not if you read that book on Parcells, there's two chapters in there about Weiss, about how much he hated Charlie Weiss and how the problems that they had and the things that Weiss did. But the biggest thing is I know people at Kansas, and they basically said that he basically did absolutely nothing at the University of Kansas, but he made several million dollars, and they're still they fired him this year, then they got to pay him for another 2 years.
Well, that's an excellent point, and that's the collateral damage of the Spygate system. All these coaches that are giving huge contracts that amount to nothing, Mangini, you know, all these guys got huge deals. So they pulled resources out of these organizations, spent years of their fans' time and money only to learn this guy's an imposter.
I tell you what.
And then what?
Yeah.
What? Josh McDaniels comes back to New England, and he's great again. And I predicted that in my book.
You know, I would like to just spend a day with Ernie Adams. Just sometimes he's got to be one. He's got to be one smart. You know, they call him the genius, and I guarantee.
I'd like to know what he's paid.
Well, you know what? I'd like to know how he's paid, because if you go to their website, he's not listed on front office. He's not listed on the coaches thing anymore. I mean, he's got to be working for. He might just be working for them in some other way. What did they used to call his position? It was like
director of NFL research.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what he does. I mean, the guy,
tongue in cheek, right?
You know, he's
almost like an ironically phrased title.
he speaks Latin fluently. And the thing about Ernie that I really respect, even though, you know, if they are cheating, and I'm saying if, but you know what I call them. I call them cheaters. Yeah. But if he is fluent in Latin and he memorizes playbooks in 2 days, you have that in your book. I mean, it's unbelievable the kind of stories that are about him. Let's talk quick about Josh McDaniel, because, you know, that was, we got about 4 minutes left. We're gonna break, and I want you on for the first segment next hour. Do you have a problem with that?
No, I'm here. It's Sunday.
Yeah, that's great. Well, let's talk about Josh McDaniels real quick. Son of a great high school coach. Basically got into football because he wanted to. He was a Division III player, I think. He was almost maybe one step above a ball boy when he took a job with the Patriots. Then all of a sudden, when they needed somebody, they had already been, 2 years without a coordinator? They just said, hey.
No. Well, what happened was, like I said, Weiss left, and they needed somebody to fill that gap right away. Tom Brady's offense was the best in the league. They could have gone out and gotten the best hotshot offensive coordinator in college football or whomever. But what I speculate in the book is that since this system was underway and being used, they had to have someone they could trust from the inside. So they choose this guy who's an assistant defensive backs coach. Now, they didn't name him the coordinator, so that year they went without one. But McDaniels can clearly be seen on the sidelines calling in the plays. And later, the very next year when he was elevated to offensive coordinator, people said, oh, yeah, he called plays last year too. But nobody ever thought to ask, why was that? Why was an assistant defensive backs coach able to call the plays?
Because
does it require some skill?
He was acting. He did a great job, in my opinion. He was just there in body, not in mind. And you know what he was doing? He was listening to a really well-called game over the headphones and pretending to talk, probably. They probably had him turned off. How about Matt Cassel real quick? We got a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Matt Cassel doesn't take a snap at Southern Cal. He plays behind Matt Leinart and the guy that's in Arizona that tore his knee up. Carson Palmer, and all of a sudden his numbers are better than Tom Brady's numbers after Brady injures himself to start
that season. That's a great point. That's another one of these random data points that only can be explained one way. People say after 2007 they stopped cheating, and I say, okay, if that's true, then how did Matt Cassel, who by the way holds a record, okay, his record is he's the only person to ever start an NFL game as a quarterback, having never started a college game as a quarterback. You got that? He never started. His last start before the Patriots start was high school. So a backup like Cassel would have gotten very few snaps because Brady was never hurt. Remember, up to that point, he was never hurt. So in practice, he's not running with the first team. Brady gets hurt in one of the first games. I think it was the first game. He comes running on the field with his helmet. His statistical season was better than Brady's first Super Bowl winning year.
I'm looking at it right here. He had 21 touchdowns and only 11 interceptions for a guy that never took a snap in college.
In college.
You know.
Right.
Here's the other thing. When he went to Kansas City, he got $62.7 million for a 6-year deal with $28 million guaranteed, and he stunk up the place. He was horrible.
Well, he actually did have one good season.
Yeah, he did.
He went to the Pro Bowl 1 year.
Well,
he did have one good season. But the point is, he couldn't repeat it. As a matter of fact, wasn't he with Pioli down there?
Yes, he was. Listen, we're going to have...
He had the same GM.
We're going to take a break. We're going to be back in about 4 minutes on AM 1230 WFAS with Brian O'Leary.
This is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play it, just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
You know, I've had some great guests on my show over the 4 or 5 year period that I've been on WFAS and earlier when I was on here in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan. But Brian O'Leary is one of the most interesting guys and intelligent guys and gutsy guys. I'm gonna call you gutsy, Brian, because you're gutsy and you know it.
Thank you.
And let me just say this. When somebody looks at your book, Spygate, The Untold Story, and they read it, they're going to want to read it again because they're going to know they missed some stuff, because I've read it now about 3.5 times. And I just saw something early this morning that I hadn't seen before. But let's do this. Let's talk about those guys we talked about again. And then I'm going to have you summarize everything.
Okay.
Summarize everything for me.
Okay.
But let's talk about, you know, Charlie Weiss. How many millions of dollars did he cost somebody at Notre Dame and at the University of Kansas? I want to say maybe $60 million, maybe $70 million. It just
at least 20.
What's that?
You know, he did have a good season. When he went to Notre Dame, he had a good season right away and scored a really big extension. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that wasn't his
team,
though.
He got – yeah, well, essentially, you know, I remember him getting around $20 million.
Yeah, he did.
Or more.
Don't you remember he had he had a quarterback that ended up getting drafted in the first or second round of the NFL draft.
Yeah.
And he had a wide receiver that was an All-American, and he ended up being drafted in Major League Baseball draft in the first round. Jeff Samardzija, who is one of the top 10 right-handers in Major League Baseball right now. But all of those guys were recruited by his predecessor. It's really easy to coach studs, especially at a school like Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a guy there now I don't even like, and they're like a top 10 to 20 team every year. Let's talk about, you know, Josh McDaniels is probably the saddest story, and he's still on the sideline with a headset on in New England because they were the only team that would take him back.
Well, not only that, I mean, he's going to a Super Bowl, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
How did he go from having the 31st ranked offense in the Rams back to one of the top just by putting on a blue sweatshirt?
You know, let me ask you, how does he even get the Ram job? How do you get the Ram job? Did they think that he just had bad luck in Denver?
I don't know. I guess he's really good in interviews, or he just chalked it up to something else. If you consider all the money spent on these coaches, like you just brought up, it's got to be close to, you know, $80 or $100 million between Mangini and the individuals that went, like Josh McDaniels, Weiss, Cornell, you know, Pioli, all these guys.
Pioli's back.
Huge deals.
Pioli's back, I think, in Atlanta. I think he got the Atlanta job. I know he's in the NFL. I want to say Atlanta because that guy got fired this year. And Atlanta, you know, they're in the process of rebuilding. A lot of coaching rebuilding going on. But I think
Bruce, yeah. you know what? Sorry to interrupt, but there's something that never made it in my book that I think that your listeners might find interesting.
Bring it
on. If you do some research on Pioli's time in Kansas City, he was an extremely unique person and brought this level of paranoia to the team that nobody could really understand. And when you put it in the context of the fact that he learned how to be a GM in New England, it makes you wonder, what were they doing in New England that made him so paranoid? He did things like anybody who had an executive office that faced the field where they could see practice plays, all their windows had to be blacked out. They couldn't see. Taping in the phones, checking for bugs. I mean, all these things that nobody had ever seen in Kansas City drove everybody crazy. And it's one of the reasons why he left. But if you read it, it makes you wonder, why would anybody act like they work for the CIA? What are they doing in New England where their GM would be so hyper paranoid?
Scott was in
surveillance.
He was in New England for a while. And let me tell you, one of the big stories when he was out there, because if you remember, the offensive coordinator that just re-signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm trying to think what his name is, but he's the OC there for the last 3 years. Ben hated him when he first got there. Now Roethlisberger loves him. Haley. Mm-hmm. You know,
Haley.
He was in Kansas City too, and he was having some severe problems there because he was the head coach there for about a year and a half. He got fired, I'm pretty sure, in the middle of the season, and that's where he was another guy that was in New England for some time, I'm pretty sure. But the thing of it is Paoli, what he was doing was firing everybody too. When Dan Snyder bought the Washington Redskins, he fired everybody. And he hired a bunch of people that would just do what he wanted them to do. That's a franchise that's in dire need of a complete just blow up. And it's never going to happen because these owners are just too powerful. You know, they got too much money.
Hey, Bruce, what are your contacts telling you is the likely outcome of this? What do you think the punishment is going to be? You know, keep in mind, this is Goodell's second bite at the apple, but he also has his best friend, Robert Kraft, who's enriched him greatly through his selection as commissioner, his giant raise from 10 to 20 million. I mean, what do you do if you're him?
I think here's what is going to happen. What needs to happen is exactly what you said. When the Super Bowl is over, the next day they should give Belichick a one-year suspension, and they should fine. See, here's the problem. The maximum fine, I think, still for an owner is like $500,000. And I think for a coach, you know, if they just take Belichick's ability to make money away from him, that's going to cost Bill. You know, it was like you said, after all this stuff happened with Spygate, what happened? Yeah. This is the one thing we didn't talk about today. Kraft gave Belichick a $3 million raise.
You're right.
After
2 weeks.
After he proved that he thumbed his nose at the NFL and he basically made his owner and made his organization look like they were a bunch of cheaters, and he gets a raise. That's Kraft's problem. That's his problem.
That had to really rub Goodell the wrong way. I mean, if you want to give the guy a raise quietly at the end of the season, you know, you can't tell me that he didn't do that to make a statement. He said, hey, you're going to find my player, or you're going to find my coach $500,000, I'm going to give him $6 million.
You know,
I mean, there's no reason he would have gotten a raise 2 weeks later. No, it was a message.
I totally agree. And I got to tell you, listen, we could summarize everything really in a very short period of time. This is a franchise that's already been caught cheating. This is a head coach.
It's a culture of cheating.
That's already been caught cheating. They're still cheating, no matter whether it's a 1 on a 10 scale or a 10 on a 10 scale. And it's about time somebody did something about it. And if Roger Goodell isn't going to do something about it, Roger Goodell needs to go away. They need to get rid of him.
Huh? There's no doubt. I mean, if this had happened to the Seahawks, do you think that they'd be talking about it on every news channel, on Bill O'Reilly, on every comedian on late night? Of course not. They're doing this because the public is sick of the Patriots. If Goodell doesn't see this and make an example of them, Brady should be suspended just like he was caught using PEDs. Every quarterback, Troy Aikman on down, has said, you can tell the field the ball immediately. He knows. If everybody that everybody else holds in high esteem says that Brady definitely knew, then he was cheating, right?
Absolutely.
And if he couldn't tell, then he cheats in all the games. He always uses uninflated balls. He should be suspended for at least 4 games, Belichick for the whole season.
Listen, we're talking to Brian O'Leary, the author of Spygate, The Untold Story. Brian, we got 1 minute left before we're going to be done with you, unfortunately. I wish I had made plans to have you on for 2 hours because we could talk about this forever. I'm going to have you on after the Super Bowl, so count on it. Because
I
guarantee you that the week after the Super Bowl, and at the very least 2 weeks after the Super Bowl, there's going to be a lot of stuff happen. And we need to be on top of it. Tell everybody how to get your book again.
You can buy the book in hardcover and Kindle version on Amazon, and you can also get it for iPad by looking on the iTunes bookstore under the title Spygate, The Untold Story.
Brian, I can't thank you enough, buddy. I wouldn't know anything about this if I hadn't read your book almost 3 years ago. I want to say I might have been one of the first guys to interview you on the radio because it had to be 2012. And from that point on, you know, I just – you know, you got to call a cheater a cheater. I'm sorry. I mean, when, yeah. when people,
well, thank you, Bruce.
It doesn't matter
that.
If it's cards. It doesn't matter what it is. If you're cheating, you're cheating. Stop it, right?
Well, that's the moral of the story. At the end of the book, I say, look, are we raising our kids in a culture where it's win at all costs? Everyone should take steroids because everybody does it. Everybody should cheat because everybody does it. That's not the way a league should be run, where your kids are wearing the jerseys to the game. And not to mention all the money that I personally wasted, that you wasted, going to see an AFC championship game that was in the bag. If the other team knows the plays, I don't want to go to the game.
No, I totally agree. And think about how bad this year has been on the NFL with the domestic violence, the Ray Rice incident. Talk yeah. about cover-ups. They cover. You know, they had to pay Mueller and his FBI-laden organization a ton of money to tell us what we already knew. They didn't have any.
Exactly.
They didn't have anything for us, right? Listen,
exactly.
thanks a lot,
exactly.
Brian, for coming on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. This has been a great show, and I wish you the
Thank
best
you,
of luck. And if I sneak down to the Super Bowl, I'll see you down there, buddy.
Sounds great. Thank you.
All right, let's go. Brian O'Leary, what a great book. What a phenomenal book that is. We'll be back in a minute. I got to sell this for the NAR. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, and I'm a realtor, by the way, members of the National Association of Realtors are here to represent you and protect home ownership. We'll be back in a minute with more Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or by emailing us at brucehallsports@gmail.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
You know, we get rid of one of the best authors of one of the hottest books in the country, Spygate, The Untold Story, with Brian O'Leary. Now I've got on the line the author of My Father Never Took Me to a Baseball Game, Stephen Costello. Stephen, how are you doing, buddy?
Doing great, Bruce. Great to hear from you today.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I'm wringing wet because when you're talking about all that's going on, you know, with Spygate and the Patriots and all that, I mean, I feel like I just ran 4 miles with O'Leary. Now I get to listen to a guy that's got a book that's on the bestseller list. Tell everybody about your book and how they can get it. And let's start talking about what was behind you. Go ahead and write in this book.
Well, I think there was a lot about it, you know, growing up around baseball, and you and I talked about, you know, how important the game is. And I actually grew up in the Bronx about, you know, 4 miles from Yankee Stadium, yet, you know, never went to a game with my dad. You know, my dad was pretty rough and, you know, physically and, you know, mentally abusive. And as a young kid, I always felt alone. And you would go to other kids' houses where, you know, the parents were normal and the families were normal. So, you know, when you're a 10, 11-year-old kid, you feel like, you know, you're the only, you know, guy going through this. So it really took me, you know, all of 50 years to finally write my story. And the story is really a memoir plus a biography about Harvey Haddix, who had the greatest game ever pitched, but it just never really got, you know, I think the proper credit deserved. So the book is kind of a book about life isn't perfect, and there's a lot of laughs in there. And, you know, there's no point where I feel sorry for myself, because I do feel, you know, really blessed to have the life I have. And my daughter wrote the afterword to the book, and I'm just humbled by the amazing reviews that it's gotten in both the sports community and the literary world.
Now, Stephen, tell everybody, we're talking to Stephen Costello here. Stephen, tell everybody what your full-time job is, because a lot of people, when they hear that, probably think you got just the most phenomenal job in the world.
Well, I'm executive vice president at Steiner Sports, and I was a client of Steiner for 16 years, and I've been there full time, you know, for 8 years. And as you know, every day revolves around either working with Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, Eli Manning, Victor Cruz, Hank Aaron, you know, all the great athletes that, you know, we have different types of relationships with.
That's phenomenal. Now you had talked about your father being physically and mentally abusive to you as a child. And I think a lot of us can relate to that, because over the years, you know, we have lots of friends And I just you know, between me, you, and all of our people that listen to us, you know, I lost my dad at a very early age. He was phenomenal. He used to actually just the opposite. He'd go out with arterial sclerosis and play catch with me till his legs ached so bad he had to sit down. Died when I was 10 years old. I grew up with my mother, who I loved to death. She was phenomenal, but she was a textbook alcoholic after my dad died. So I basically, you know, a lot of my mentors were coaches and other people's fathers. And occasionally you'd go in someone's house where you just could feel something wasn't right. How long did this go back with you as a child?
Well, I think it went back to, I think the one thing was, at a very young age, I just knew that there was a major disconnection, and I knew my dad had a lot of anger issues. So I just kind of laid low, and I kind of stayed out of his way, so to say. So, you know, his truck would pull in from coming home from work, and I would slip out the back door and just go to my friend's house. So, you know, I basically knew that there would be a time where I would be on my own, and, you know, I wouldn't have to, you know, be living through that. So once that happened, I really made the best of it. And I think the only advice I could give, and I mean, since my book's come out, so many people have reached out to me with similar, you know, situations, and you just can't, you know, you can't let your dad live inside your head, and, you know, you can't hang on to that. You've just got to have new thoughts and fresh thoughts and go on and live your life. And, you know, one of the things I've tried to do really hard is be a great dad. And, you know, one of the stories in the book is one of my daughter's first games. You know, I picked her up early from school and said, we're going to the Subway Series. And she was just beyond thrilled. And she said, Dad, why are we leaving, you know, the house at 2:30 if the game's not till 7 o'clock? And I said, well, we're having dinner with the manager, with Bobby Valentine, at this place around the corner. And the next thing you knew, there was like 8 or 10 police officers surrounding our table. And we had dinner with, you know, Bobby V, Ralph Branca, who's his father-in-law. And, you know, so my daughter has definitely had, you know, a different type of experience, you know, with me taking her to games.
Let me tell you, you know, Bobby V, a lot of people don't know this about Bobby Valentine, maybe the best athlete in the state of Connecticut history. Like a four-sport athlete, including track and field, you know, football, basketball, baseball. He, when I sold my first big Super Bowl package, which was the Dallas Cowboys going out of Dallas, Texas, he had a, you know, he had a restaurant in Arlington near the ballpark, and
sure,
he let me sell my, in the evenings, set up a table and sell packages to the Super Bowl out of his restaurant. Wanted absolutely nothing. He just knew I was a, you know, I knew a lot of baseball players, and he was trying to help me out. One of the nicest guys. He really gets a bad rap. He does. Hey, how can people get this book? Tell everybody
okay,
how
you
they can
get
it.
The book. No, no problem. But hey, you could get the book on Amazon Kindle. It's $3.99, and you could also get the soft cover on Amazon, and as well, you know, it's a pretty short book. It's like two hours and change to read. It's extremely, you know, from what the people have said in the reviews, it's extremely funny. There's a couple of emotional things there where, you know, you may tear up a little bit. But let me jump back in on Bobby V, because there's one
sure
story I have to tell you. Is I had a fundraiser, actually a gala, at my house. And this was about 10 years ago. We were raising money for kids with terminal illnesses. And I didn't even invite Bobby V because he was in Texas and I didn't want
sure
him to feel obligated to fly in. He had found out about it and called me up and said, you know, why wasn't I invited? And I said, well, Bobby, you know, I knew you were in Texas. So I don't want you to have to fly to New York. I didn't want you to feel obligated or whatever else. He goes, well, I'm already coming, and I'm going to be the first one there. And the guy was at my house at 4:30, stayed till midnight, taking pictures with my neighbors and everything else. And this was – that's really the man he is. And, you know, you're right. He definitely does get a bad rap. And yeah, I don't know that there's a nicer guy in sports or a more caring, kind, you know, individual, you know, as Bobby Valentine.
Well, you know, you've obviously had a lot of success with this book. I'm sitting here looking. You got 5 stars. You're like the top selling baseball book for how long now?
Well, it's been
27
book,
weeks,
which,
or is it longer
yeah,
than that now?
Yeah, it's about 30 weeks. It's been the top rated book in baseball and baseball history. And you know what? When you're writing a book, you know, you just don't expect that. And you know, it took me 3.5 years to, you know, kind of juggle family and business, and then
yeah,
writing late at night and on the weekends. And Yeah, I guess I'm, you know, I'm proud and humbled, you know, by the results so far.
Well, I really enjoy what we do every Friday on Debbie Nigro's show. That's a lot of fun getting on there with you because it's almost like we're sitting in the same room, even though we're hundreds of miles apart. Let me ask you a question, if you don't mind. Your father and mother, are they still both alive?
Yeah, my dad and mom divorced, you know, many years ago. My mom moved on and married a retired nuclear submarine captain, you know, who's just a real intelligent, you know, gentle guy. Went to Annapolis and you know, my dad's out there somewhere, you know, so.
Really?
I have a stepdad now. I have two great kids. So everyone's still alive. And, you know, I didn't feel like I needed, you know, my father to pass away to write this book. I wanted to write it. I wanted to write it in the moment and when I was ready for it.
You know what? Let me tell you something, Stephen. If you can touch one kid's life with your book, it'll be worth writing the book, period.
Go ahead.
No, that's all right. Go ahead, buddy.
No, I've been speaking at, you know, some colleges, and I spoke at Fordham and Hofstra, and, you know, almost every time I speak, whether it's, you know, 17-year-old kids or 40 years adults, there's somebody that says, you have a few minutes, got to get your email. And, you know, almost singularly every single time, you know, there's someone who's gone through, you know, just some crazy stuff. I mean, it still goes on, you know, 2014, 2015, you know, it's still happening, which is a shame, you know, and part of it, you know, part of helping yourself through it is finding out someone else who shared that experience.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to even try to compare it to what you've done, but real briefly, you know, I went through a stretch 8 or 9 years ago where I didn't even realize it, but I was suffering from clinical depression. And I mean, I was sick. I thought I was going to die. I understood why people didn't want to be alive because I felt so bad. I was lucky. I got good medication, a lot of therapy. What I did in therapy was wrote letters to people and, you know, family members that are long gone. And that was the best thing I ever did. It just opens you up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And I have to go back to you saying on the show, you went on our show from being a pinch hitter to now you're like the fabric. The three of us just have, I don't know, I think it's such a conversational style and, you know, getting the word out there and talking about the games. And, you know, it's really been, you know, it's been really a pleasure sharing that with you this year.
Well, listen, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and talking about your book. And I want to have you on again. Look, I want to have you on the week you're not number one, okay? That way we'll get you back up to number one, hopefully, through this. If I can ever get syndicated, shoot, I'll definitely get you there, okay?
All right. Well, I'm sure you and I together could be pretty, I think we probably could get syndicated.
Absolutely. Are you going to Super Bowl, buddy?
No, I generally just kind of watch it with the family, and I also have to, you know, be operational for Steiner Sports as far as what we're doing and what players we're signing and what we're going out with. So, you know, you're better off, you know, being home and getting to the office and having a landline rather than,
well, listen,
you know, being on your way to the airport trying to make a deal.
You make sure you put me on your list. I don't need to give Hunt Auctions any more money. I think I'll give it to you guys, okay?
All right. Well, thank you so much.
It's really
a privilege being on.
All right, buddy. Hey, Stephen Costello.
Thank you, Bruce.
Stephen Costello. Great book he's written. Been at the top of the bestseller list. You know, it's called "I Never Went to a Baseball Game with My Father. Never Took Me to a Baseball Game." 5 stars. It is. We'll be back in a minute. Pretty sure Mike Wallace is going to be on when we get back.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation anytime by calling 240-317-7294. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back, and I've got Clark Judge on the line. Clark, I didn't really want to... I wasn't sure if you were going to come on today or not, because I'm like a little persona non grata maybe with the NFL office right now. Because I had Brian O'Leary on earlier that did Spygate, The Untold Story. He wrote that a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And it's a phenomenal book. It's well documented. I've even talked to people in there. And it's really kind of, you know, it's almost like when you get to a point where you think you're doing everybody a favor by just being quiet about something. and then all of a sudden that thing keeps happening over and over again. What I'm starting to see is a few people loosen up a little bit and start talking about, well, something needs to be done about this. I don't want to put you on the spot. Would you rather talk about the Super Bowl, or would you rather talk a little bit about what everybody else is talking about?
Well, if everybody else is talking about it, let's talk about it.
All right. Did you like the way I did that, though, Clark? I think the world of you. You know that. And what you do on Talk of Fame Network is phenomenal. Everything you put out is great. Are you going to put out something today for tomorrow morning reading, tonight reading?
Yeah, I am. Yep. Then I want to go a little bit more towards Seattle. We've been doing so much on New England at this point, but nothing more needs to be said, although everything is going to be said.
Well, it's going to, you know, the amazing thing, in my opinion, is, you know, it is taken away from the game, but what's that?
But there's no reason, there really is no reason to go over and see the Seahawks next week. I mean, you're going to be with New England, but essentially I'm going to write about what prevented Pete Carroll from having a long and happily ever after marriage with New England. And it's a missing element that I'm writing about and will be posted tomorrow morning.
Well, didn't Belichick took over for Pete, right?
He did, and Pete took over for Bill Parcells, and Pete lasted 3 years there. So why was the marriage so short? I've got a pretty good idea, because I was very close to Pete Carroll at one point, and he told me some things, and so I just ended up writing about him, and we're going to post that tomorrow.
You know, I think the world of Pete, and I don't care what happened at Southern Cal. That's a big program. I mean, everybody's – you know, when you go back to college, because I know a lot of guys that have coached in college and the pros have gone back and forth. You know, college in a lot of ways is a lot harder than coaching in the pros. When you coach in the pros, you're pretty much done. You don't have to, you know, when the season is over, you don't have to recruit. Recruiting is, you know, I don't care who you are. You might be a head coach. You might be an OC. You might be an assistant coach. You might be an offensive line coach. But when you're in college, you're gonna get in a car and you're gonna drive and you're gonna talk to kids and their families and their coaches, whether you want to or not. In the pros, in the NFL, you got the draft, you know,
right.
And you got a guy doing that job for you. He's called a general manager, unless you're the Washington Redskins or the Dallas Cowboys. But you know, and even that's changing for the Redskins. I like Pete Carroll. I like what he brings to the game. I like the fact that his kids like to have fun. Even when Pete is down, he doesn't look down. Do you understand? You know what I mean?
Well, he's got so much energy and enthusiasm, and it's energy and enthusiasm you generally don't see in a 63-year-old man. But that's what he loved to do was recruiting. He loved being out on the road because he's a great talker. He's a guy who's very convincing. He's somebody who could, sell a quart of ice cream to, you know, some people in Alaska. I mean, he's very, very convincing. And he's a guy, loved being out there talking to recruits. That's what he's very good at. And so at USC, he was in his element. I really thought he would stay there at some point. And then I knew he wanted to leave because he didn't like the circumstances under which he left. People said he couldn't coach in the pros. He wanted to prove them wrong. To get back there, he goes through USC, becomes the king of USC, but that wasn't enough. He had to get back to the pros. And now he's pretty close to being the king of the NFC and maybe the king of the NFL. But I know that, you know, wherever Pete's been, I mean, there have been some questions about, you know, recruiting tactics and how this guy got in, or now it's in Seattle. There are some questions about some of those players in Seattle as well. But as a coach, pretty good coach, boy. And when he was a defensive coordinator in San Francisco, I thought there was none better.
Yeah, he was amazing. And I'll tell you, he was a pretty good ball player for a guy that's not very big. I mean, he was a defensive back, I guess, at Southern Cal, right? And then
he went to UOP. He went to University of Pacific.
That's right. I don't know why I thought that. He coached out there. And then the other thing is that when he was in the pros, was he not with the Eagles? Did he play? He played in the NFL, right?
I don't know, and I don't think so. I really don't.
I thought he was a defensive back with the Eagles for like 2 or 3 years, and then
he was a graduate assistant at UOP, and then sort of worked his way up. But he's been around a lot of really interesting people. Monty Kiffin, for instance, he thinks the world of him. And he's had a very long and storied career. And honestly, when he was in San Francisco, because he had come from the Jets,
I thought they
found the right guy there. But then, you know, they made the coaching change. They bring in Steve Mariucci, and they turned that coaching staff over. And lo and behold, for him, lucky for him, he had his options. And he was interested in St. Louis, but he wanted to go somewhere where there's a franchise quarterback. Where there was a franchise quarterback was New England. That's one of the reasons he went there.
Absolutely. And you know what? What is it about the Jets, Clark, that, you know, since Weeb Eubank, I can't remember a coach that really just kicked butt and took names. I mean, Parcells was okay. Yeah, he was okay, but he didn't win a Super Bowl.
No, that's right. But he got him to a conference championship game, and he did a pretty good job in the short period of time he was here. I mean, you know, you look back at some of these coaches. I mean, Herm Edwards had some success. Mangini had 1 year of success. I honestly think they should have hung on to some people, and, you know, I'm in the minority in this. I probably would have hung on to Mangini a little bit longer. I thought what he was doing in Cleveland, he had the right idea, and then they got rid of him there. But they just turn over coaches too quickly. They don't give them a chance. And sometimes, honestly, they pick the wrong guys. I mean, you look at, you know, Rich Kotite, Bruce Coslett. Sometimes they just get the wrong guys. But I don't know what it is. I mean, after a while, you just go, it's got to be ownership, right? I mean, you got to pick the right guys. I think they've got the right guys now. I like their choice as a general manager and head coach, I think. But you don't know. You just never know until these guys suit up. But Todd Bowles seems to me to have the makeup that I would want in a head coach.
Well, he's like, you know, I met Todd a long time ago playing in these NFL golf tournaments in the D.C. area when he used to play with the Redskins. And you won't meet a nicer guy than Todd Bowles anywhere. And he's, you know what, he's like a real, you know, even when he was younger, he seemed like he was older. Does that make sense to you? I mean, he just...
Oh, yeah. No, that's right. Yeah, he does. But, I mean, nice guys don't necessarily make good head coaches. And he's... He was a good assistant. Andy promoted him to a defensive coordinator in midseason in Philadelphia. That was a disaster, as we now remember. But that was the last year for Andy and Andy Reid, I'm talking about, in Philadelphia. But he said, I remember when I was talking to him, he said, Todd Bowles is going to be a good coordinator somewhere, and he's going to be a head coach somewhere. And at that point, he just promoted him in midseason defensive coordinator. Remember, they had Juan Castillo, and then they had to make that change there. But he wasn't very successful there. Then he goes to Arizona, where he's very successful. He did a terrific job there. And honestly, to me, he was the reason he and Bruce Arians, I mean, let's give Bruce Arians some credit, but those two together were a perfect mix. And he was the reason that that team stayed afloat when they were losing quarterbacks left and right.
Yeah, I like the way Bruce Arians is bringing in a couple of guys to help him with the defense. You know, I was real happy to see him give the Pittsburgh DC, who's, what, 74 years old now?
Older than that, Dick LeBeau. I think he's 77. I
mean, yeah. Did you read that story about that lady in her obituary? They actually wrote in her obituary that him losing his job in Pittsburgh had a lot to do with her dying. And it was like this woman that had been a Steelers season ticket holder for like 50 some years.
They love their football in Pittsburgh, and they love Dick LeBeau, and rightly so. The guy did a terrific job with that defense for so many years. But now, I mean, it's the head coach who's on the line there, and that's Mike Tomlin. He got rid of Bruce Arians as his offense coordinator. Now he's gotten rid of Dick LeBeau as his defensive coordinator. Well, guess what? Next up on the chopping block, head coach.
He just gave Haley an extension. I think he got three more years as an extension, which says a lot for Haley, because Haley's a guy a lot of people kind of, you know, thought might have been doing some weird things there for a while, and he seems to have really landed on his feet in Pittsburgh. Now, I know his dad was like vice president of operations for 30 years, wasn't he? Haley's dad in Pittsburgh?
Oh, yeah. No, Dick Haley was a great, great scout and personnel man, terrific guy. And Todd's an unusual guy, sort of quirky guy, but I like him. He's got some passion, fire in him. But when he went there, it was a very difficult transition at the beginning. And I think when you just simply look back at it, you go, well, was it necessary to get rid of Bruce Arians? I don't know the answer Mike Tomlin does, but it was necessary in his mind, and they did. And he goes to Indianapolis, and lo and behold, Indianapolis goes from last place club to a team that's in the playoffs. Well, of course, one of the differences was they had Andrew Luck as their quarterback, where they didn't have Peyton Manning the year before. But and now, you know, Dick LeBeau's resume can stand up against any defensive coordinator at any time, at any period in the history of the NFL. But again, he felt it was necessary to make a change. I'll tell you what, whoever replaces him, I hope to heck he has a good year, because they're going to be all over him. Dick LeBeau is a very, very popular
guy. You know, there's some good defensive guys out there right now, and we're going to talk about that when we get back. I've got to do a little spiel here. Can you hold on for me, Clark, and we'll finish
sure.
up
sure.
with you? Clark Judge, everybody, do not hang up. Do not turn the radio off. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. More with Clark Judge in a minute.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com or by going to Facebook.com/BruceHallSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're talking to Clark Judge, Talk of Fame Network, NFL insider, good friend of mine. Clark, we've never met, but we're on the phone. We text and tweet daily. I can't wait to come to New York and see you. We're gonna have to go to Peter Luger's one night. It's all on me. For
yeah, you
sure.
You got it. That's the date.
Love that place. Hey, listen, real quick before I forget it, Ernie Banks, you know, maybe one of the greatest baseball players to ever live. Ernie Banks was Chicago. He was the Chicago Cubs for many, many years. He passed away this week. I want to say he was 83 years old. I was lucky enough to play golf with Ernie Banks in a Cracker Jack Classic baseball tournament back in 1983 or 4. And he can play golf too, man. He was like a 3 handicap. And, you know, just those baseball players, when they get old, they still like to hit the ball a long way. And I just wanted to say, you know, goodbye, Ernie. We're going to play 2 for you today, for sure.
Yeah, great guy, great player. Also, I will tell you, last week on Friday, I think it was, maybe it was Thursday, Tommy Mason passed away. Tommy Mason was a great running back for the Minnesota Vikings,
yeah,
in the first round draft pick. So, yeah, we've lost a couple good ones. And I will say also, listen, since we're on the subject and it's sort of depressing and morose, but Paul Nedell, who was a great football writer and a good friend of mine, he passed away yesterday. He'd been battling a serious disease for a long time. It was a really sad day for me and many of my colleagues.
Now, he was in New York. He's in New York, right?
He was.
Yeah, I saw Gary Myers wrote something about him. And, you know, that's the thing about life. I mean, you got to take death with life. I mean, you know, nobody likes to think about the day they're going. But when I'm sitting around and, you know, I'm 61 years old now and I'm thinking, I'm seeing these guys dying in their 70s, I'm like, you know, I need to go do this. Maybe I need to go do that. Hey, Clark, let's talk a little bit about the game next week, because I don't know what your plans are. You may be on – are you going down to Arizona? You are, aren't you?
I am, but, Bruce, I was leaving. I've got a flight leaving tomorrow – leaving Tuesday. I've got to change it. We've got a blizzard coming in here in New York, and it's starting tomorrow afternoon. So when I get off the phone with you, contacting American Airlines, I got to get out of here tomorrow.
You know what? You'll get there, and there's an outside chance you might see me. But if I come in, I'm only coming in for Saturday night and the Taste of the NFL. I love that event. That's my favorite event.
Yeah, it's a good week. I mean, it's a long week, but I've done it for, I don't know, the last 34 years or so. And I like doing it because I like seeing a lot of my friends, and I see friends in and out of the sport itself. I mean, we're going to do our show live next week, but on national radio, Yahoo Sports Radio, and national radio, and we're going to be doing it with a lot of people. We've lined up guests, and I know already we've got Dez Bryant, Tim Brown, and Dan Marino lined up, so that's good.
Super. Tell Danny Marino I said, hey, he'll probably – last time I saw Dan Marino was – gosh, I played in his golf tournament, and he had Hootie and the Blowfish play for free in front of everybody, like 2,200 people that had just he sent invitations to. Listen.
Sounds like you're in a lot of golf tournaments, Bruce.
Well, I used to be. I'm not anymore. I mean, back when I had money. Listen, when I was in the sports entertainment business, you know, it's like I tell everybody, if I hadn't sat on the 50-yard line or right behind the first base dugout for every major event I've ever been to, I'd have $250,000 in cash in the bank. Now I just have to keep working until the day I take my last breath. I hate to do this to you, but let's just talk about the gorilla in the washroom. You know, they just keep doing it. The Patriots. You know, just give me your take on that. I mean, I don't even have to lead into it. Just tell me what you think is going to happen.
Well, no, what I think they've got to do is, one is they've got to be found innocent of this, but it doesn't make any difference whether they've been found innocent or not. In a lot of people's minds, they're cheaters once and for all. They just look at them and go, oh, the Patriots again? Yeah, tell me something I don't know. Cheaters cheat, okay? And these guys are cheaters. That said, that's why I think, honestly, they have to go out and to regain whatever is left of a damaged reputation. And make no mistake, Bruce, their reputation has been damaged. Whether this is proven right or not, their reputation has been damaged by this. They got to win this game. They got to prove that they can do what they haven't done since 2004. And honestly, with Spygate, people look back and they say, well, you know, before Spygate, They won three Super Bowls. After Spygate, they haven't won anything. So do we connect the dots? And in my mind, you don't. But all of a sudden now, there are a lot of people who, critics of theirs, who've gained some momentum with that. And I think now what you have to do is you've got to go out there and say, okay, you know, we are bigger and better than this. We believe, whether it's true or not, I mean, we believe this has nothing to do with who we are or what we are. We're going to win this game, and we're going to win it for us, not against, we're not going to win it for them. And it's basically an us against them mentality. It worked in 2007. Look what happened in the immediate aftermath of Spygate. After they were turned in by Eric Mangini, next seven games, they didn't beat people. They destroyed them, including your Washington Redskins. Destroyed them. And now in this game, they're not going to destroy the Seattle Seahawks. They're too good. But they can beat them. And I think now they've got the incentive. They've got to look at themselves and say, listen, nobody believes this but us. It's us against the world. Let's go out and prove it. Whether they can or not is another matter.
You know, I agree with you. I think that they can do that. The only thing that bothers me is I knew a lot about I knew a lot more about Spygate because I had Brian O'Leary on my show 3 years ago, and right when the book came out, and I read that book, and then I actually made some phone calls. It was a well documented book, and there are a lot when that first happened. And I'm talking about, you know, the filming on the sidelines and then the extra, you know, the extra frequency in the helmet and just people not going, not people, they weren't saying no, that didn't happen. They were saying no comment. That means they didn't want to lie. And it got swept under the rug. And, you know, it's almost like the O.J. Simpson situation. That's the way I look at this. You know what?
Wait, let's stop right there.
No.
Two people died there. Two people died.
But
no
I'm
one
just,
died here.
Yeah, but here, I'm not comparing the deaths. I'm comparing how bad the event was. O.J. Simpson didn't do one day for a double murder, and I consider Spygate pretty bad. You know, but this is not that big a deal to me. I really don't think it mattered what they played with. Now, if they did it on purpose to cheat, well, they should pay a price and they should take care of it. Or like you said, they should make sure they're found innocent of it and make sure that the league does a good investigation. But a lot of times it's not the last thing you do, which is the reason somebody gets penalized. It's all of them. It's the first one. It's the second one when you come back from. And I don't even feel one way or the other. I don't care. You've heard me, Clark. I call them cheaters all the time because I read, I believe. You know, I mean, I feel the way I feel about it. There's 31 other teams out there besides the Patriots. I don't understand how the league can let this happen, you know, more than once, and it's happened more than once. And a lot of the stuff like that Brian wrote about was guys that have left there that have done nothing, you know, guys that have left there. Now there's been a couple, you know, Mangini's a guy. I agree. I think Mangini's a decent coach. He started out as a ball boy. What, when he was 24 years old and he's, this kid understands the game. Charlie Weiss, you know, I don't think so. I mean, I know people in Kansas that think he shouldn't even be around a football. You know,
hired him. You know, but they hired him. Yeah. They just talked to those people before. Listen, in and of itself, I agree with you. I don't think this thing is a big deal, even of itself. But there was a rule, and some teams abided by it, and apparently this team may not have. I don't know that, but it's the same team that keeps coming up over and over. And after a while, you go, where there's smoke, there's fire. And so you look at New England and say, geez, why is it we're always talking about the New England Patriots? And I think in Belichick's mind, there's a real fine line between gamesmanship and between – and he says, you know, there's something here with games, and we try to master his greatest strength is his greatest weakness. He's a master of minutiae, so he knows exactly where all the holes and loopholes are that he can sneak through, where the gray areas are, and where, you know, the NFL may have a rule, but they're not really going to enforce it. And that's my problem here. There was a rule here, and I don't think the league really enforced it. I really don't, because I do think there are other teams doing it. It doesn't make any difference whether they are or not. It's like when you get pulled, you say, oh, everyone else is doing it. I don't care. I got you, all right? They got the Patriots. Now, we'll see what happens here. My vantage point for them to prove anything. I don't know if they're going to be able to prove anything. I think New England probably skate, but in the minds of people outside of Boston, New England, I think they go, oh, yeah, Patriots, it doesn't matter. You know, they're everything they've got is tarnished. Everything, their legacies are tarnished. The tarnished legacy of the franchise. Robert Kraft, for me. I look at Tom knew how I felt. Well, gosh almighty, I hope this isn't true. But I stood there and listened to him the other day, and I just kept shaking my head going, I don't believe this. I just don't know why he's being straight up with people. He's talking to Christian. Just answer. And on dealing with semantics, he said, you know, I didn't deflate the ball. Of course he didn't. The ball boy might have. Did anyone tell that ball boy? That question was the benefit of the doubt because we keep seeing their name brought before us again and again. I don't know what happened here, but if they broke the rule, they should be penalized. And if they broke the rule, and I'll be tough for Roger Goodell here, but if they broke the rule, he'll come down heavy-handed because of the relationship he's got with Beasley on him.
Yeah.
So he often heavy-handed, especially at the right situation when people said he didn't do enough. Well, it's not going to be anything to happen before this game, obviously, but there'll be something after the game.
Clark, I can't thank you enough for coming on. I hate it when you're the last guy on because I got to get you off. Listen, you have a great time out at the Super Bowl, and if I sneak out there, I'll see you out there, okay?
Yeah, I'll look for you on the golf course first.
We'll be back next week with more of Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. And listen, if you're in New York, stay home if it gets bad. Stay home and build the fire up. Build you a good fire. See you later, people.